This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
Here we go again, Producers Podcast. Thanks for checking it out. As always, Michael Horn, B96 in Chicago is the guest. I have his interview. It's a two-part, actually, I'll be honest, a rather long two-part. It's lots of audio in there. I want to make note right out of the gate that I played, you're going to hear B96 audio. He images now in New York, Amp in Detroit. He does work with Kilohertz. All of those demos, you can get the full 12-inch extended remix on the website. I featured just part of the demos in the podcast, you know, for time's sake and whatnot. So be sure to go hear all that is Michael Horn's audio on the website. There is a show notes post that is linked to every episode, well, almost every episode. Anyway, that's coming up in moments. I will mention just a couple of upcoming guests and then do some more business stuff at the end of part two. So hopefully you stick around, listen to part two, and then hear the end of that, see how you can kind of be involved in the blog and the podcast and all that. Mitch Todd will be the next guest. I've mentioned him in a couple emails now and taken some questions for him and have his interview already scheduled. Mitch is the Senior Director of Production Music Programming over at Sirius XM and someone I've been wanting to talk to for quite a long time. I would say a bigwig in the world of music imaging. And then my good buddy Ian Sturgeon, who I've known now a long time, maybe 6 years. He does some of my favorite sound design work, period. But if you're looking for work that you can literally buy, you know, non-barter service work, Big Fish Worldwide has some of my favorite stuff as far as just singular buyout packages, and then his monthly updates are a must-have. So, always been a fan of Ian's and finally getting him on the podcast. We'll do that in the next two or three guests. Anyone else you want to request, you can always do it. Don't forget, you can send me an email, use the contact form on the website. And I do have a long list that I have been slowly but surely getting through over the years. And I believe, you know, now that I think about it, next month will be, I believe, the four-year anniversary of this podcast. I can't believe it. And honestly, the list of guests that I have is so long, I kind of keep making contact with new people, but I do want to go back and re-interview some of the legends that I've already talked to. So I've actually had requests for the, you know, part two type interviews, for the re-interviews. So if there's somebody that you really want to hear from again, you know, Dave Fox is the first person that comes to mind, and perhaps, I mean, his schedule is so busy, but perhaps I'll reach out to him. That one seems kind of automatic if he would be you know, charitable enough to give me more of his time. But anyway, anyone else you want to hear from again, don't hesitate to send me those notes as well. Otherwise, we get it going with some Michael Horn imaging from B96.
To celebrate Valentine's Day today, B96 is giving you... Wait, it's today?
Wait, where are you going?
Man, I am indeed.
Okay, guess I'll have to handle this on my own. Make sure you listen to B96 today, at noon, because Nick is going to hook someone up with a Coach purse, and, and inside the Coach purse is a trip for two to see Katy Perry live in L.A. So, I guess you gotta... Oh, hey, you're back!
Excuse me, I just forgot my wallet.
Oh! Anyway, listen to Nikki today at noon to win.
Chicago's B96.
Improve your home now with this incredible...
No!
Full UV rays.
Looks like somehow Mel Gibson got a hold of our commercials. While we sort this mess out,
we're gonna play a load of music because you deserve it.
This is another B96 commercial free hour.
You get it now?
This is the sound of Chicago.
Turn the lights out now.
This is
B96. More music now.
And there is B96 Chicago, the great production work from Michael Horn. Mike, hey, thanks for joining the podcast, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm honored and flattered to follow in the footsteps of so many great people. And
yeah,
and here's
well,
me.
Yeah, no, you're one of them. You're one of those people that I always wanted to eventually get to. That's, I finally did that in the studio post on you because I'm like, man, it's been too long. I, you know, the guest list gets huge, but I had to put some love for you. So, and after that, then the requests really came in saying, hey, how come you haven't interviewed Mike Horn, jerk? So
that, well, I'll send out a check if you tell me who it was that emailed, then I'll send them a check. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I will. It'll be a long list. You can give them each a dollar. But seriously, I appreciate it. You're at one of the, one of the premier stations in one of the great radio markets. Just to kind of roadmap for you in this interview, I actually wanted to spend a good amount of time, you know, talking a little more specific about market attributes. You know, we'll get into Chicago and the CHR battle, the landscape of, you know, hit radio and all that kind of stuff. I really want to spend some time on that, but why don't we start and just kind of bullet point your background for me. You know, maybe tell me exactly how you got started in radio first.
Sure. Well, it's funny because a lot of people that you have on or that I see interviewed online, they have this great resume with these list of impressive stations, and this is it for me. I'm one of those lucky guys where I grew up in Chicago, and I grew up listening to the station, and we had Eddie and Jobo, who are our Heritage Morning Show, who actually still work down the hall for K-Hits. It's our sister station, my PD programs both. So I grew up listening to this station, and when I was in, I don't know, sixth grade, around that age, I started really getting into radio, and my parents bought me one of those Mr. Microphone things where you could, you know, tune the FM frequency. And so I started, back selling and front selling songs, my mom's favorite songs, and then taking them off a cassette deck. And I'm like, and now here's Kenny Rogers with The Gambler. And then in eighth grade or seventh grade, in that around the same time frame, I got one of those little portable cassette decks and started making like old time radio shows with a couple of kids from my school. We would write them and then make the sound effects and do all that. So I kind of had a bug at that age. And then when I went into high school, you had to pick an elective class, and I'm like, they offer radio. Oh, I'm for sure taking that. So took it, did pretty well. And then from there, after my freshman year of high school, we moved, and the new school that we went to did not offer radio or television. So kind of put it on hold and did like the DJing thing, the mixing, you know, had a gig at a roller skating rink, and, you know, this next song is an all skate, you know.
And
so,
were you spinning vinyl?
Yeah. And not on 1200s, on bad Radio Shack turntables. So you'd have to kind of push it with your finger if you were speeding things up. And it was quite a time. But while there, they brought in who used to be the guy who used to be our production director, commercial production director. And at that time, there was no such thing as an imaging director. Mm-hmm. His name's Greg Murray. And they brought him in to come and DJ, you know, on Saturday nights. He had his own little mobile setup and would come and play the songs, and then we could say we'd have B96's own there. So got to meet him, and he took to my mixing. He's like, oh, you're pretty good. And I told him that I loved radio. So we developed a friendship, and then when I got into college studying radio and television broadcasting, he gave me the opportunity to do an internship here, and I never let them kick me out. I've been here ever since, over 18 years.
And tell us, I mean, this is 18 years ago, so radio is at one of its many peaks. Everything's, you know, great, but how long did you have to intern? How long did you have to be part-time before you got a full-time gig there?
Well, it kind of depends on, now that's where you get into technicalities with the CBS Corporation.
Okay.
I started here interning in, let me see, graduated in 90, so like the winter of 93, the beginning of 94, I started as an intern, and I was here probably for about 6 months or so, and then they gave me a board hopping job, and they were getting ready to bring back George McFly, who had been here before and did nights, and he was, you know, one of those, he used to rap over the song, you know, up to the post, and they needed a producer, so I was producing for him and producing for the overnight show at the time. He was paying me out of his pocket. I wasn't, you know, on CBS payroll for that overnight show. But eventually, after after my kids were born, I said, you know, I kind of could use some health benefits and those kind of things. So that's when I technically went full time. And I think that was 99 or so. So.
Oh, okay. So actually you did, you spent a little while then.
Yeah, I was doing the full time thing, but I wasn't getting, you know, wasn't on salary. I still, you know, and didn't have all the full time benefits. But I mean, I was here working a lot. But yeah, so it wasn't until I think it was 99. I believe that was the year that they have down as my anniversary date here when I went full time and they made the title official.
Nice. So you've gotten to see B96 transition pretty drastically then, and you've had a hand in the, you know, the creative sound of it as well. There's a lot I want to ask you about it. Tell me to start, what are like some of or one of the most glaring changes in the station from, let's say, 96-ish to now?
For sure, the length of production pieces is, I'm sure that's universal, as I've heard everybody else mention. When we used to do our concert promos, you would have, you know, 3 to 4 full-blown 8-second hooks in there, and sometimes they'd be 1:05, 1:10, and that does not happen anymore. We rarely, unless it's our big summer concert or our winter concert, the Summer Bash and Jingle Bash, respectively, we don't use full-blown hooks in any of our, you know, even if, you know, we're doing a promo for an Enrique and J-Lo ticket giveaway, there's no hooks. It's just kind of the music in the background. So, and that's the main thing that I notice, you know, having to trim things down and keep it, quote unquote, PPM friendly. So,
and in your experience, was that pretty gradual, or there, at least for you and at that station and in that market, was it kind of one day they, you know, they said, all right, stop, we can't do this. PPM happened. We have to, or, you know, so was it kind of instant that you trimmed, or was it very gradual?
It was kind of instant, not to the extent of where it is now. But it was right when we found out we were going to PPM. My PD and I guess some of the higher up programming people within the company were studying the PPM markets and finding out, you know, what it is that won in those markets and the way to do things. And so then we sat down one day and, you know, we do that from time to time, go over short-term and long-term focus of how we want to do our imaging. And that was one of the things that came up was, okay, according to PPM, people tune out when music is not playing. So we need to keep the music going and your ridiculous fart jokes out. So,
yeah. I mean, when you say it like that, which it's pretty obvious, right? I mean, and it's funny because you'll always have people on both sides of that fence. You know, if you give them entertaining content, no, they won't. But then the science says you're a music station. People want to hear the music. And if you're not playing music, they go away. You know, it's so simple, really.
Absolutely. And it's funny because I go back and forth on it sometimes because I do, you know, when I'm listening to radio, I want to hear things that entertain me. And, you know, I could just plug my iPhone into my car stereo and put on my favorite song, or I could put on Pandora or something. So I listen and I want to hear something entertaining or something that I connect with. But at the same point in time, when I watch my wife or my daughter,
yeah,
if they hear somebody talking or if it's not another song that's obviously starting, they punch out. So
I do that as well. I watch the way, you know, because we can't look at ourselves. We don't listen to the radio like real people do. And so when I watch other people listen and I see like unconscious or subconscious, just guttural reactions when they're listening, they auto punch when it's not a song and you're thinking, now wait a minute, that's somebody's pride and joy. That's their work.
Absolutely.
But to them, like, they can't help it. They just punch. They punch the dial. They don't even know they're doing it.
Right, right. It's completely, like you said, you have to watch other people because you have this perspective. You've seen behind the curtain. You know what goes on. And I can tell when, you know, one of the morning shows is running one of those, you know, one of their callers is a caller on demand person or it's canned. And so I have to kind of understand that and take things from, you know, and watch. And that's what I do a lot of, if you want to call it market research. I watch my wife, I watch her friends, watch my kids, just to see, you know, what they're talking about. Because I use that kind of stuff in my promos. And you know.
Yeah, let's get more detailed into that. That's where I was going to go with you, talking about the target demo. You just talked about watching your wife and friends, but be specific about what you do to make the content on B96 relatable to the target demo.
Sure, and that's one of the hard things is because, you know, I know things from my perspective. So a lot of times I'll, when I come up with a concept, I'll call my wife and go, hey, what do you think of this? Or play it for my kids and see, hey, what are you thinking? Or my kids are really good about, when they were younger, I used to play them songs and go, hey, this song is going to be a hit. You know, you got to, well, now it's the other way around. You know, my son's like, oh, you got to check out, you know, so-and-so. Like
fun.
Or, we are young. It's funny that you mentioned that. That was the first one. He told me that like 3 months before I'd ever heard of them. And sure enough, it's, you know, one of the biggest songs on the radio. So they're really good about that. So I've worked a lot, especially the past couple of years, because when I listened back to some of my older stuff, they were jokes, but they were more from a male perspective. One of the guys, we'll probably talk about it later. One of the guys that I work for now, one of the program directors, is Rain in Detroit. And that guy is really good at putting himself in the female perspective. When, you know, when he's writing, like we have a legal ID that says, ooh, those jeans really look nice on you today. It's mm-hmm. real simple and kind of out there. And, but it works. My wife's like, oh, that's awesome. Women like to hear that their jeans fit well. And I never think of things like that. Or follow us on Twitter and we'll tweet all your breakup texts, or we'll tweet all your breakup tweets. We'll retweet them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh. And then, you know, it's Christine Fung and she's like, besides, we didn't think he was right for you anyway. And I'm like, I never thought of things that way. You know, you have to entertain both males and females. And a lot of times I was doing, you know, kind of male driven stuff, you know, jokes about Lady Gaga having an extra piece of meat down there kind of thing. So I kind of changed the now some of it obviously translates to both men and women, but
yeah,
I definitely try to think more from a female perspective and get in touch with my feminine side.
Yeah. Always important. And I can tell that just by talking to you, you do well. But was there a point in, you know, like you started this in your 20s and, you know, a guy in his 20s may not have the ability to relate to a female like a guy in his 30s, you know, regardless.
Trust me.
So, you know, you may have been doing, I guess also what I'm asking is, did the station get more honed in? Like, were you able to do more because the station was looser? You know, back in the 90s, radio was kind of king of the world and we could pretty much do no wrong. And then was there a turning point for you, or was that another kind of, was that a gradual thing?
I would say kind of gradual. There was a period of time, maybe about 3 years ago or so, where Dom Theater joined the company and became mm-hmm. the vice president of CHR. And Dom had a different philosophy than what we had been kind of doing. Now, we had done imaging, but not as much with personality. It was more of, you know, like back in the 90s where listen to these great effects I can use on my
yes.
voice person and stutter
yep.
with the beat. And, you know, it was kind of like production masturbation, if you'll excuse the term.
Yeah.
And Dom came in and said, listen, you don't need to put all the filters on your voice person that you're doing. And you, you know, you can still relate to people, and it kind of stripped things down. And the writing is more important than, you know, all of the great production values that you do. So that kind of changed things there, and that made me go, okay, let's do production that people go, wait, I want to hear this. Or, I'm going to tune out. Or, you know, instead mm-hmm. of just, boom, in your face, here's great production and tons of edits.
You're a guy who's been, you know, producing brilliant imaging for a long time, but as you're just saying, you know, we've had to sort of back off on the fancy crap. You're not producing for producers. You're producing for listeners, you know. So do you find yourself still with difficulty not making stuff too fancy? Do you feel like maybe you're not even earning your keep if you haven't spent a long time on the actual production of a piece?
Yeah, sometimes I do. And that's one of the great things about what I'm doing with Killer Hertz, because for that, you kind of are producing for producers. So, you know, making, you know, work parts for other people to use. So mm-hmm. I can kind of do the fancy production stuff there. And yes, I definitely feel guilty when, you know, I'll sit down and go, okay, this is promo for, you know, upcoming weekend promo. and the writing part takes longer than the actual mm-hmm. production. So mm-hmm. especially with these, you know, now these 15-second quick into commercial break, you know, this weekend, listen for your chance to win, boom, you're done. So
yeah. Yeah.
There's definitely a very where I feel like, boy, what am I getting paid for? But, you know, in order to make it all flow cohesively and to make to uphold the sound of the station and, I, you know, I guess I feel like I'm doing my part still for that. I don't know.
Yeah, let's talk just a little bit more about B96 specifically. You mentioned Christine Fung. Tell us all the tools you're using, you know, the voices you use and the types of services, the types of sounds you like to use on your stuff.
Sure. We have Christine Fung, who was on, well, I do three stations. She's on quite a few CBS stations. She's awesome. She has the ability to do that that kind of low and sexy, you know, or she does the up-tempo, hey, you know, I'm just a girl hanging out in the car listening to the radio with you voice.
Yep.
And she's very versatile. So I use a bunch of different things on her. Yeah, she's really good.
She's at, just so people know, she's at KROQ in L.A., and I don't know what she does there. Is she still there?
Yeah, I believe she's still assistant for Kevin Weatherly, and that's kind of how she got her thing.
Yeah, yeah. I voice a station, she's the female on, and she's awesome.
Like she really is.
I stand aside. I just say the basics and let her do the hard work.
And she's able to pull off those as we've gone more, as I've written and produced more female oriented, we have utilized her ability to pull off those characters and to do that, you know, hey girl, I'm just listening to the radio with you kind of thing, you know. So she's been awesome to be able to use her, and she's very relatable. And then our other main station voice is Dave Campbell, who's actually
based here in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, he was here
in Chicago. You use Campbell and Christine Fung, two great voices.
Yes, and Dave and I are our friends. You know, we're one of the people from the business that I associate with, you know, outside of the studio walls and things. And he's a great guy. So I have the ability to call him and go, hey, listen, you know, I know we sent you this script. I changed it up. I have this idea. Can you roll with it? And mm-hmm. and he's good with that. He's really good. And he's right down the street. So if he doesn't answer my phone calls, I can drive down, get a cab and go bang on his door until he answers. So
and just let people know a little bit. I mean, you don't need to talk extreme specifics, but do you have an unlimited page deal a month with him? Do you have limited deals with your voice talent? And how often are you sending stuff out?
With Dave, I believe it's one page a month. I'm not sure if it's the same with Christine. Neither of them have ever complained to me about the workload, and they're always very quick to turn things around, which is great because that's the weird thing about us. Sometimes we have a lot going on, and sometimes we don't have much going on. So we rely on more of the music-oriented imaging, like this is the sound of Chicago and mm-hmm. quick hooks from three songs or whatever.
I'll be honest, one page a month sounds extremely low. Do you get by on generally about one page a month out of him?
Yeah, I would say sometimes. Wow. There are definitely times when we go over. Now, I keep a lot of things on file, too. I've got I'm really good at organizing the scripts, and so I can go through and search for words or phrases and things. But in general, now when we get to our big concert times, you know, Jingle Bash and Summer Bash, that's when we're sending out three pages of stuff. And I'm also the, what do you want to call me, secondary voice. So it's funny. I've been here for a long time and been voicing commercials and stuff, but never really did a lot of imaging because my PD always said, you know, you're a commercial guy. But I kind of developed like a second read where I could do the more deep read, you know, that kind of thing. And I did it one time in a pinch and he liked it. So he's like, oh, good. Now we can use you whenever we need. So if there's stuff that comes down last minute, hey, we've got this promotion we're doing this weekend, it's just I just voice it rather than sending things out to them.
And that's good for you, too, because you want to build up that side of your talent.
Yeah, anyway. Absolutely.
real quick, but tell me some other things you love to use on the station. Do you have imaging services? Obviously, I know you're producing for Kilohertz, the latest incarnation of Kilohertz, which we'll talk about in a bit. But
sure.
What else do you like to use on the station?
That's pretty much it that I use now. We used to use Production Vault, and I liked some of their stuff. And it just seemed to me that they got a little into a lot of Clear Channel related stuff, which makes sense. It's a Clear Channel service.
Right.
So it was like, you know what? That's when I kind of had to teach myself. I'm like, all right, let's build some things. Let's make our own beds. Let's, you know, do some not over the top sound design, but some sound design stuff. And so I've learned a lot more kind of forcing myself how to do production. I mean, I've been in this job and able to do the actual production, but the creation of beds and the making of, you know, shells and sound effects and stuff, I kind of relied heavily on the service for a while. And so now it's Kilohertz and a lot of my own creation. And the guy that does the commercial production here, Josh, who's been one of the biggest influences in my radio career, he does a lot of stuff too. He's a very talented producer and remixer and stuff. And he's taught me so much technically about the business. And so I rely on him. Yesterday, he went into the studio and whipped up like three real quick beds in like the course of 2 hours. So,
and who's what's Josh's name? Josh. What?
Josh Ross. Josh R. He. I've known him. It's funny. We've known each other since back when I was DJing in the nightclub circuit. We met, and he's very talented. He taught me so much because I used to do things a lot differently, and to get into, I don't want to get into too much of the technical aspect, but I always did things by ear, and I could hear something and go, okay, that sounds right to me. And he taught me a lot about the technical side of things, you know, how compression works and why you should use it and when and how. Like, I never knew how to sidechain anything until Josh started
okay.
here. Because
so
I didn't learn that. So
maybe also a little more visual production. I mean, that's the one thing I've learned over the years, is to produce a little more visually than audibly.
Yeah, absolutely. And to worry about audio quality, because I don't know how much of it affects the listener, but some of that will, you know, if your production sounds muddy, it gives the feel of, you know, the radio station doesn't sound as professional or crisp or not as pleasing to the ear. And so,
and it can also date us. I think it can date a station as well if you use muddy elements and just
absolutely
just dates a station. So yeah, but get a little more into that briefly. You know, you say you're trying to make your own elements and your own music. What are your favorite tools to make? Let's start with music. What's your favorite thing to make music with?
Well, I'm kind of just now learning how to use Logic.
Yeah.
I don't know a ton about it. I know the instruments in there are awesome, so I've been kind of cheating and going in and playing an instrument from Logic and then sampling it, because I use Ableton Live as my main. It's my main workstation.
So you use a lot of loops then? Where do you get your favorite loops from?
Sometimes I make them. I have a collection of loops that I've purchased from different places over the years, and just basic drum loops, or I'll sample some of the songs that we play in rotation, or remixes of rotation songs. It's a good place to get, you know, just a drum kick, and then throw a quick synth over it, or, you know, filter things out and play around with it. So, but I'm totally on Live. That's, you know, that's my main workstation. So to be able to use that, the music production in there is awesome, as well as, you know, obviously your basic editing functions. So,
and any other, you know, fun new things you found recently, tools like plugins or, you know, software synths or anything that you've been liking lately?
I definitely use you know, some of the standard All the Waves plugins. Sonics I love, and the built-in effects in Live are really cool too. And if you I'm sure it's the same way in Pro Tools. Just for me, it's easier to snap things to the grid in Ableton. So I'm able to, you know, throw, if I want to put a delay or a reverb on there, and do it on the grid, and it all syncs up with the tempo of whatever I'm producing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the built-in effects in there, there's a cool redux effect that I use when I'm, you know, kind of transitioning from one song to another.
Yeah, I was actually thinking more like, for example, ReFX Nexus 2. That's something that I love, and I've been getting more and more into that over the last while. So, you know, maybe there was something you had found that actually, you know, generates sounds or music.
You know, I haven't messed with that, and that's something that I'll definitely have to take a look into. I was using Stutter Edit, which a lot of people are on, which is, and it's not necessarily new. But one of the things that I've really gotten into is just different EQs and different filters. It's one of the things that I picked up from Jeff Thomas was, you know, he does such a great job when I hear his old pieces and his vocal processing and his filtering. And I still do some of that, you know, production masturbation, if you will, to make the voices stand out. And after bugging him for a while, I finally got him to send me some screenshots of one of his filter chains. And there was like 8 plugins. And I'm like, wow, I'd never layered, you know, I mean, I'd layered a lot on top of each other, but they were kind of the same thing, just notching at different frequencies, then running a compressor, and then flanging and delays. So I definitely have started doing a little bit more of that, layering, you know, multiple versions of the same plugin or filter on there. So, but...
Nice.
Yeah, you just use a lot of compression and filters and delays, EQs, nothing like that really stands out. The one, if there's one, I guess, that I couldn't live without, it would be Voxengo Voxformer. I like one a lot, especially on Christine's voice. There's the plugin that works really well that kind of notches her voice at just the right spot. So
nice. Cool. Let's talk a little bit more about Chicago, the radio landscape there. Since you have been there quite a while, tell me a little bit about the battle. What stations, if any, if you are, I don't know, if you guys focus on competitor stations, but which stations do you focus on, and who is you know your biggest competitors taking away your target there?
I don't know if we necessarily focus on them. We definitely talk about what they're doing and what we're doing differently and kind of work on, you know, trying to work on improving ourselves first before worrying about, you know, what someone else is doing. But there are definitely two main competitors in the market. KISS FM, the Clear Channel station, which for a long time... they were kind of, you know, an afterthought. They came in, we had been in the market for a long time, and it was kind of, they were the new kid, and they, you know, they were calling themselves the new KISS FM, and I think it was probably about 5 years or so before they actually started, you know, taking listeners, and then there's the station called The Mix, which is supposed to be, you know, a hot AC station, but you know, when I heard them start playing Nicki Minaj, Starships, or Black Eyed Peas, and I guess Black Eyed Peas aren't on that, but I'm trying to remember there was another song where I heard and I went, okay, they're an adult top 40 station. They stopped playing the, you know, the John Mayer records or, you know, like Jason Mraz, those kind of Goo Goo Dolls, Train. They kind of got away from that, and they're playing like full-blown CHR, and they're doing really well in the ratings too. They have a heritage morning show that's been around for a while, so that kind of helps them out too. You know, everybody knows Eric and Kathy. So, we've had over the years, there was the alternative station Q101 for a while was making noise, and they were kind of sharing the same demos as us. And then they went away, became a news station,
And so the Q101, which became FM News for 5 seconds, now it's I101, I think, which is basically going to be another adult top 40 station.
Yeah, and they're playing those records that The Mix used to play, at least from what I gathered, just checking them out online. And
so they might actually be a hot AC station then.
Yeah, I would say. But they're going to play some of the 90s and 80s music, which, you know, so it's kind of... hot AC. It's not really a soft rock station, but you know, it's along those lines.
So I guess what I'm getting towards here is, since PPM started, you know, and it's been in like, especially the trade news recently. You know, CHR is like the PPM format. They're flipping to CHR all over the country, and CHR is, you know, the big format now, and it does well in PPM. And so Chicago has, you know, like you said, two officials, and then you've got the mix, which is basically a CHR, and then you've got I-101, which will probably end up leaning CHR after it doesn't do well as a regular hot AC. Your opinion, you know, you got a station like B96, who's been there forever, doing it in different fashions, and Kiss FM, who's now been there quite a while. Do you see CHR as a mainstay, as a format that will continue as it is now to be the darling of the PPM era? Or do you think eventually it'll be sort of cyclical and it'll all kind of crumble back down and you'll go back to one or two CHRs in the market? Where do you see it going?
You know, I wish I had a solid, rock-solid long-term answer, because then I could probably make myself some money. But I mean, CHR is basically pop music, and
right,
pop music being popular. You know, it's always been kind of the dominant form of music, and then things kind of splintered off where you had, you know, stations that were rhythmic CHR.
Yeah.
So they were playing the hip-hop and the hits in hip-hop, and music these days, hip-hop has kind of gone onto a down cycle, and I don't know if it's going to come back or not. The way that record labels have had to contract and the way things change, I think people are going for more of those artists like the Taylor Swift, where they can cross lines and be country, mm-hmm, or adult or pop. And you know, I see more of that from a, you know, perspective of it's easier for the record labels to sign an artist and have them appeal to more people than it is to, you know, sign a bunch of these smaller, you know, artists that made you, you know, kind of a one trick pony kind of thing. So,
yeah,
you know, I think that's the way things are going. People are finding more mass appeal, more mainstream, and CHR, you know, that's been the bread and butter of this industry is pop culture and pop music. So, you know, I just think that CHR is going to be a strong format, yeah, for a while.
But, you know, CHR does kind of the circle where it'll get very dancey as it is now.
Yes, I mean, it's very
super
dancey,
tempo driven and just all vanilla. I mean, I'm a huge top 40 guy. I love, you know, I grew up on Kiss FM in LA, Rick D's, and you know, then it goes into its rock phase, then it goes into its urban phase, and then it comes back. It seems like this dance, I mean, do you really think it's going to kind of stay in this sort of rhythmic, tempo-based dance CHR, you know? Because you've been in that almost 20 years now. You've seen the circles.
Sure, yeah, no, and one of the, when I first started here, it was a little after I first started, we called ourselves Chicago's Dance Beat, and we were playing those dance records from, you know, that you would have heard in the clubs, you know, like, mm-hmm, LaBouche, La Clique, those kind of groups. And
all classics.
Yeah, yeah. So things have kind of changed from that way. I mean, we went and we were Chicago's hits and hip hop for a while, where we were playing, you know, Dr. Dre songs and things.
Yeah.
So possibly, I mean, eventually I think that it may get back to that. But I mean, you still have artists that do things that are kind of more along those lines. But, I don't know. I don't know if the rock industry is, talking to my friends that I have that work in that side of the business, it's, they say there hasn't been that group to come through and be, you, mm-hmm, know, the next big thing. There hasn't been any really huge breakthroughs. If you, you know,
but it's not fun. You don't think it's fun?
I don't know. It's funny, we had a talk about their new song the other day, where it's kind of like a combination of a bunch of different,
yeah,
older sounds, but they still have that that pop feel to it. So, you know, where they're going.
The Producers,